From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And today, President Biden will be delivering his State of the Union address. You can catch that on most NPR and PBS stations at 8 p.m. Illinois time. The State of the Union is an opportunity for a president to lay out his agenda and attempt to give direction to his allies in the Congress, in this case, the Democratic minority in the House and the Democratic majority in the Senate. Among those in the audience will be Illinois' two U.S. senators, Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth. We spoke with Durbin last week on the program, and today we're going to hear from Duckworth. We actually also recorded this interview last week. Duckworth and I talked about Ukraine and abortion, among other issues, but we also had a chance to take on some bigger picture ideas, like how to get things done in a divided Congress and whether there's been enough generational turnover in politics. Senator Duckworth, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me back on.
I want to begin with foreign relations. You recently joined that committee. You've long been on armed services. Those topics come together, of course, in Ukraine. As you know, America recently committed to sending Abrams tanks to Ukraine. So far, that's artillery, now armor. Do you think air power is going to be next?
Well, you know, I think that we need to follow the lead of our NATO allies. What the Ukrainians need most is anti-aircraft equipment. And so sending them the Patriot missiles, which we're still in the middle of using, is probably going to be the most effective. I don't know that sending them, you know, F-16s is going to be the most effective equipment to fight drones, right? The Russians are attacking civilian apartment buildings and hospitals and ambulances. They're targeting these civilian locations in Ukraine using drones from Iran, using their own Russian armor and their own artillery. So really the most effective equipment that the Ukrainians really need are air defense equipment. And as I said, you know, the Patriot missile is right now what they really need to have against to fight back against cruise missiles. You know, I'm not ruling out sending them fighter jets, but at this point, it's not the most appropriate piece of equipment, weapon platform that they need to fight the war that they're fighting right now.
In general, has military aid from America, from NATO, has it been too gradual?
You know, it's not just aid from us. It's aid from all of the NATO countries. So I would have to say no, it's not been too gradual. I think it has been appropriate to the threat that they have been under along the way. The nature of how Russia is fighting Ukraine has changed. If you recall, when this whole thing started, remember they had, what was it, like the 10-kilometer, 30-kilometer long line of Russian tanks, you know, so really it's more about responding to the war that is being fought right now. And that nature of that combat has changed over time. You know, our NATO allies who are right on the front lines, Poland in particular, has sort of the greatest insight into what is needed. And they're the ones that are directly training the Ukrainian troops. In fact, we actually have Illinois Guardsmen over there helping to train Ukrainian troops in Poland as well. So I don't think it's accurate to say that, you know, it's been too slow, it's been too fast. It's been appropriate for each of the phases of combat that they've been under.
As you know, there's a sort of an isolationist, a small but powerful and potentially influential group of isolationists among Republicans in the U.S. House. How confident are you that the United States will continue to be able to provide aid to the Ukrainians resisting this Russian invasion?
Well, I think you said it. This is a small isolationist minority who are very out of touch with the reality of what is happening. And in fact, the majority of my colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle that I've talked to certainly support helping Ukraine and helping Ukraine fight for its freedom. Remember that should Ukraine fall to Vladimir Putin, what happens is you actually have Russian troops on the border directly with Poland, which is our NATO ally. And we could be in a position where we could get pulled actually into the war with American troops fighting should the Article 5 of the NATO Mutual Defense Alliance gets invoked. And so the best thing that we can do to keep American troops from having to be there on the ground fighting directly with the Russians is to make sure that the Ukrainians win.
Senator Duckworth, I want to move now to domestic matters. You're also, in terms of Senate committees, I began by mentioning you joined Foreign Relations. You're also going to be leading, I've read, the Senate Aviation Subcommittee. There's a big FAA reauthorization bill on the agenda this year. And of course, the Southwest Airlines debacle back in December disrupted the travel plans of many Illinoisans and people across the country. What are your priorities chairing that subcommittee?
Well, I think, you know, my priorities for aviation has always been the same. I've always been on the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, of which the Aviation Subcommittee is one of the subcommittees. There is a lot that we need to do to make sure that aviation is safe and fully operational in this country, both general aviation, which is private pilots like myself who go out there and fly little airplanes, to commercial aviation. So with FAA reauthorization, I want to do several things. One, we need to look at how do we make commercial aviation more responsive to the flying public, whether it is making sure that it's more accessible for those who use medical devices, to making sure that we don't allow airlines to make decisions where they end up where Southwest did, you know, shutting down essentially the entire country because they were unable to meet their operational needs. So there is the whole consumer protection piece of it that is important. Safety is always going to be number one. And that is something that I will be very, very carefully watching to make sure that the FAA maintains the highest safety standards. And in fact, you know, we have a lot of ground to make up, especially after the Boeing MAX 8 crisis. And we need to regain our name in the world as far as the gold standard for aviation safety. Which has been tarnished in recent years. Also, we need workforce development. We don't have enough pilots. We don't have enough mechanics. And we need to make sure that we grow that workforce so that we can actually fly all those aircraft that are being built and that we can build the aircraft that are needed because we're also short on machinists and other people who work in the aircraft manufacturing industry as well. So really three pieces, which is one, safety, two, the needs of the flying public, three, workforce development.
I also want to talk about another domestic issue, and that is the issue of abortion and reproductive health. Our listeners are hearing this conversation on Tuesday when President Biden is set to give his State of the Union address this evening. You and I spoke last week, but I understand you've invited Dr. Aaron King of the Hope Clinic in the Metro East part of Illinois to be your State of the Union guest. Do you see any chance for federal abortion legislation that a Democratic Senate and a Republican House can agree on?
Well, I'm going to try to work as hard as I can to get to a place that we can agree on some things. You know, remember that at the Hope Clinic, for example, when I went out there to visit, people, think that they only perform abortions. When I was there, they were also helping women have access to reproductive devices like implanting IUDs. 80% of the procedures they conduct there is providing a woman with a pill, which should be safe. And, you should be able to access Plan B, for example, no matter where you are in the country. So there's work that could be done there. I certainly hope that I can reach a place where these personhood amendments that are being passed in places like Texas and there's and other places that are going to a zero abortion policies, that they don't inadvertently outlaw procedures like in vitro fertilization, which I use to have my two beautiful girls. The fertility community, medical community has said that they're very much anxious because the process of, you know, when I was going through IVF, I had five fertilized eggs, three were non-viable, so we discarded those. Well, in many of these states, those three that we discarded could have made my doctor potentially face manslaughter charges if a fertilized egg is a human being. So I do think that there are places I can work with Republicans on, and maybe we get there by looking at how they're defining, terms that are important, not just for abortion services, but also for fertility treatments, for reproductive rights. It's about women having the right to make decisions about their own bodies, whether that's abortions or the type of birth control you want to use.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. You know, thinking about that issue in particular, abortion, and how divided Democrats and Republicans generally are on that issue. It puts me in mind that of something the political scientist Frances Lee wrote in a book called Insecure Majorities. The short version of it is that she says because control of Congress changes so often these days, that competition has sort of shifted the priorities of lawmakers away from policy and toward seeking partisan advantage. You have seen, unless I'm mistaken, since you've been elected to the Senate, there's been a different power combination every 2 years, right? Republican majorities, then divided, then Democratic majorities, now divided again, Republican president, Democratic presidents. How do you see that affecting trying to work at legislating, right? You could work on an issue for years and know that it's possibly going to go nowhere given the divided control of Congress.
Well, I've had that happen with legislation that I have worked very hard on and been able to eventually pass them. And in fact, I think it made the legislation better. Right at the last day of the session last year, I passed my Martha Wright Read Just and Reasonable Calling Act, which called for ending the monopoly that phone companies have for what they charge prisoners who are incarcerated in our county jails, for example. And it took me, I worked on it for well over 4 years and it failed in two different Congress. It didn't move. And then right at the end, we were able to get it through unanimously out of the Senate. And then I worked my contacts in the House. We got it through unanimously in the House. And now we have this bill that gets rid of this monopoly that really preys on those who are incarcerated. And more importantly, their family members who are trying to stay in touch with them, where they were paying as much as, $10, $15, $20 for a 4 or 5 minute phone call. So I see the situation as forcing you to work harder to compromise and find a way to move forward. I'm proud of what we did last year in terms of getting bipartisan legislation passed, like the CHIPS Act, like the infrastructure bill. Yes, there is always going to be partisanship, but there's also always going to be those folks in the middle, like myself, who will continue to work to pass things in a bipartisan way. And it just means that those of us in the middle are just going to have to work extra hard and compromise more and figure out a way to get legislation that both sides can agree on. But it is possible because I've done it. I've been doing it for the last 6 years here in the Senate.
It's a great example because you said yourself that was two sessions or two terms that didn't go anywhere. And then all of a sudden it passes unanimously in both chambers. What is the magic? What makes the difference in a case like that?
A couple of things. One was continuing to, from the first time I introduced it, getting more and more supporters. It took me, 3 years to get the National Sheriff's Association to come on board. And as soon as they came on board, they reached out to a lot of my Republican colleagues who then jumped on board once the Sheriff's Association agreed to it. And so, in the beginning, I put it forward and there wasn't the support of the sheriffs, and yet the sheriffs are the ones who run the most number of these jail facilities. And so it forced me to, kept knocking on the door of the Sheriff's Association. And finally, they were very kind and generous and opened up an executive meeting for me to come. And I presented what I was trying to do. And they agreed to that they would listen to me. They didn't agree to anything else. And then it was 18 months of negotiating and adjusting back and forth until we got to a place where they said, okay, we're on board. Now we're going to call Republicans for you. And so that process of earning one another's trust and letting the other side see that you truly are working in good faith to try to get to a piece of, a solution that is good for both sides, that takes time. And it's probably more valuable to get things done that way than to just have lopsided one-party control shoving things through.
The last thing I want to ask you about, and this is another more of a sort of a big picture idea, is generational change in politics. You and I are both, I think, in Generation X.
Do you think we're the slackers?
Yeah, right.
We're the latchkey kid slackers and nobody,
Do you think we will ever see, will we ever see a Gen X president?
Oh, I think so.
This gets at the question of older generations, right? We've seen Speaker Pelosi retire. Do you think an older generation of politicians ought to step aside to make way for younger generations?
In some cases, yes. In other cases, no. I mean, I've learned a lot as the junior senator to Dick Durbin. And Dick Durbin, just in this past 2 years, has managed to get the most number of judges confirmed, some of the most diverse a group of judges, and got them confirmed in a bipartisan way. And so it's been very valuable for me to watch him as a legislator, navigate and negotiate these agreements so that we can get all of these judges and these benches filled in a way that Republicans were willing to vote on these judges as well. I'm pleased that Hakeem Jeffries, a fellow Gen Xer, is now the speaker. You know, so there is movement forward. But I do think that in both chambers, but especially here in the Senate, we need a lot more diversity in age, in gender, in ethnicity, because that greater variety of viewpoints better serves our nation, because it better reflects the population of our nation.
Yeah. Minority Leader Jeffries. Yeah. As Gen X. Excellent. Well, I guess you know where I'm driving to. Do you think wishful thinking on your part?
That was a Freudian slip.
Last question, and where I'm driving up to, do you think President Biden should run for reelection?
You know, I think that's his decision. He's got to decide what's right for him and his family. If he decides that he wants to run, then of course I will support support his run for a second term. He's certainly gotten a lot done in his first term, and he's only halfway through. You know, think of all the legislation that we passed. You know, he put us out of a pandemic. We passed the CARES Act. We passed the American Rescue Plan. We passed a bipartisan infrastructure deal. We passed the CHIPS Act, which is already attracting investment into Illinois, for example. There's a lot of work that he's done successfully. So if you just, you know, make the decision based on his accomplishments, I would say that, yeah, he should run for a second term.
Senator Tammy Duckworth, thank you for taking the time to be with us on the 21st Show.
Thank you. It's good to be on.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.